This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Hello, I'm Joan Ellis. Welcome to Island, a two-part series in which, without sounding too much like a question on my geography O-level, I attempt to compare and contrast our very own Isle of Wight and two very different islands off the coast of Australia, Kangaroo Island and Heron Island on the Great Barrier Reef. I'm off to see the wonderful wizardry of Oz. Unfortunately, travelling from one island to another takes more than just clicking my heels together three times. Try bus, boat, train, plane, taxi, car, boat. Many hours and tissues later, I have a heavy cold and pity the poor person in the seat next to me as I sneeze and snuffle my way through the flight. En route, I bump into Eddie Izzard in the departure lounge. He looks incredible. When we board the plane, he turns left and I go right. I catch up with him again at Adelaide Airport and compliment him on his legs, resplendent in tight denim. He tells me it's all thanks to the marathons. I assume he means the ones he runs, not eats. He tells me all about playing Bertie in the film Victoria, shot at Osborne House and East Cowes. I try to hang on to this tenuous island link, but having cleared customs, he waves goodbye and tells me to have a good time. I take it as an order. The cost of the ferry is eye-watering. Never has the price of crossing the Solent seemed so reasonable. The sea air is intoxicating, and I arrive on Kangaroo Island just as I'd hoped, bounding with energy. The island is, not surprisingly, home to kangaroos. Hang on, there's one leaping through the field. Clearly, I'm not in Carisbrook now. These muscular marsupials usually wait until dusk when it's cooler before putting in an appearance. It's virtually impossible to get insurance to drive your car after dark when the roads are awash with kamikaze kangaroos. I cannot imagine hitting one of these creatures. They are the size of grown men, giant gym bunnies with enviable pecs. If you know where to look, you can spot them hanging out during the day. I see one frisky pair mating by the roadside. Their antics draw quite a crowd, all eager to catch a glimpse. Less dogging, more kangarooing. At 150 kilometres, Kangaroo Island, or KA as it's known to the locals, is almost four times as wide as the Isle of Wight, Australia's third largest island lying south of Adelaide. And I'm now heading for Stranraer Bed and Breakfast. I can't wait. Since 1996, over 11,000 people have stayed here, travelling from America, Italy, Germany and the UK to experience the true meaning of hospitality, courtesy of Graham and Lynn Wheaton. Built in 1920 by Graham's grandparents, Stranraer is special. A working sheep farm, it's home to 6,000 sheep, one cat and various wildlife. And for four glorious nights, I get to live here too. I was meant to take the trip from the Isle of Wight to Kangaroo Island last year, but the place was fully booked. Having read nothing but wonderful things about Lynn and her cooking, I had no intention of missing out. No half-baked B&B for me, not when homemade pastries, fruit compotes, local honey and free-range eggs were on the menu. Postponing my journey by a full 12 months until a vacancy became available proved one of my better decisions. There is no yellow brick road in this land of Oz, but something just as magical awaits. A rose and lavender lined pathway leading to the front door of this gorgeous Victorian farmhouse. Wide-eyed with joy, I step over the threshold and instantly know I never want to leave. Beautiful, homely and welcoming, this is my kind of place. Not for me some boxy white hotels with towers fashioned into swans. Here's what Graham Wheaton has to say about farming this very special piece of land.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, your station, your community.
I'm with Graham Wheaton, who is the owner here of Stranraer and the head sheep farmer, I'm assuming.
That's correct.
Yeah,
yes.
And how many generations of your family have been here?
We're into our fourth generation. Our son has just taken over the property, so four now.
Yeah, and your family, I mean, they were pioneering. They faced so many challenges and adversities, which they overcome to be hugely successful. And I gather one of the most respected families on this island. What does it feel to be part of such an amazing dynasty?
It's incredible, really, when we think about it today. We look back over the hard work that my grandparents and my parents put into the property. It's just amazing that we're here today to be able to carry on that tradition. I can remember going around this property with my grandfather in a horse and buggy and looking around the property, and it's just amazing to think how things have changed over that period of time. From horses and getting to quad bikes, this life has certainly changed, from horses pulling machinery to the ultra dynamic machinery we have today. It's just amazing how things have developed.
Obviously, for efficiency purposes, you need to have that kind of machinery, but I sense that there's some sadness in you that the horse and buggies are no longer part of life here.
Well, I guess life certainly changed over the years, and I guess you move with the times, but I know my grandfather was—he loved horses and working with the horses. But in 1936, my grandfather and grandmother went to England, and they did a tour there. They were there for 12 months. And as my grandfather left, he said to his three sons, he said, "If it looks like a good season this year, you can buy a tractor." So my grandparents no sooner got on the boat and they'd ordered the tractor. So they were all set to go into the modern era at that stage. So it's just incredible how that changed their lives, just having a tractor around the place.
So having been a farmer all your life and coming from farming stock, what's been the biggest challenge you've faced in your time here?
I guess we've had good seasons and bad seasons, but droughts certainly really test you out. To see the place just shrivel up during dry periods of probably 4 or 5 years. That was incredible to go through those periods. I guess you get a lot of challenges as you go through farming with weather and prices, interest rates and things like that. They've all been a big challenge to the farming community.
And what's your thing that you most love about the life?
On the island or the property?
Both.
Just, I guess, the fact that my grandparents came here. It's a beautiful place to live. It's very quiet. But if we want the nightlife, we can move off and go to the mainland. But 2 or 3 days of that in Adelaide are usually enough. But just being on the property, I just love going around the property every day. And we've got two lagoons on the property which accommodate a lot of bird life. And it's just a beautiful place to live.
And how big is the property? Because I've seen you send off on your quad bike of
the
morning.
It's about 3,500 acres. So, and of that is about 2,000 arable. So, and we're running around 6,000 sheep across the property. And most of those sheep are for meat production. So we produce a lot of lambs for Coles and Woolworths, which are the big food chain stores around Australia. And a lot of our heavier lambs are actually exported overseas to overseas trade through United States, Arab Emirates and places like that.
Mm. So you've come from, like I said, a family of pioneers. You've come from people who have faced down adversity. How do you think that's impacted on you personally?
I guess you go through life, there's always challenges and you adapt to them. And I know my grandparents had severe times when they were farming, and my parents, but you tend to adapt. I think farmers are fairly resilient and they seem to accommodate most situations.
And they say behind every good man is a good woman, and I believe you've got a wonderful wife in Lynn.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah, the day I met her was in 1966, middle of the year, and she's the best thing that's happened to me.
Oh, that's lovely, lovely to hear. And if anybody's sort of thinking this would be a great life, or they're about to inherit a farm themselves, what's the one piece of advice you'd give to them?
Well, you have to live with the highs and lows of farming, and if you can get through that, then it's certainly a challenge.
And with Stranraer being used now as a bed and breakfast, and you open up your lovely home to all sorts of people like me to come in and enjoy your wife's lovely cooking and your hospitality, how does that sit with you?
I just love it. I can't wait to get up in the morning and meet the new people we have. And it's just a challenge every day, and I know Lynn feels the same.
And have you ever met anybody that you've found difficult?
We've had over 13,000 people stay here over that period of time, and I can say honestly there's not one person we wouldn't have here back.
Oh, that's right. And do you get a lot of repeat customers?
We've had a few repeat people, yeah, absolutely.
They must really love it because, to come over to Kangaroo Island is, it's such a joy, isn't it? It's a wonderful thing. What's your favourite local in terms of animals?
It's pretty hard. We love all the animals here across the island. They're very unique. And it's Kangaroo Island.
Yeah. Which is the one that makes your heart sing when you spot it?
I guess the echidnas, they're fascinating animals. They really are. They fossick around all day and night, and time doesn't seem to worry them.
You're the third Kangaroo Island local that has given that answer. You all seem to love those little creatures.
Yeah.
So they're the little porcupine ones,
aren't
they?
Yeah, fascinating.
Well, we've had just a wonderful time here, so thank you for your hospitality and your time. Graham Wheaton, thank you.
Thank you, Joan.
Your local station, Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
The saying behind every great man, there's a great woman, applies perfectly to Lynn Wheaton. As well as being wife to sheep farmer Graham, Lynn runs her 5-star B&B single-handedly. Former domestic science teacher turned domestic goddess, this woman can give any celebrity chef a run for their money. Every night, I arrive home, as I come to think of the place, to my seat at a table shared with a handful of other guests. Graham joins us for a pre-dinner chat before retiring to the kitchen, leaving us to swap stories of kangaroo and koala sightings. At home on the Isle of Wight, I am just as happy to catch a rare glimpse of a red squirrel or brown hare. Lynn and Graham offer more than beautiful accommodation and great food. They provide real warmth. One evening, when a couple failed to show for dinner, Lynn, fearing they'd had an accident, called the hospital. Turned out they were simply lost, but Lynn cared like they were family. You wouldn't get that from many places. They'd probably just give your table away and charge you for the privilege. With its incredible wildlife, fields, farmland and breathtaking beaches, Kangaroo Island looks and feels a lot like home. Like the Isle of Wight, Kangaroo Island is a place of outstanding natural beauty and environmental interest. Both islands are renowned for their local produce, agriculture and tourism. Both are imbued with a sort of unique community spirit that binds people together in remote rural communities. Both make great playgrounds for children and adults alike. And both bewitch me, making me feel so at home I never want to leave. The feeling of belonging at Stranraer reminds me of halcyon days at Kinggate's farm, where I holidayed every year as a child on the Isle of Wight. This ancient farmhouse was the stuff of dreams. The then owner, Mrs. Linnington, lived in one house and rented out the other to city dwellers like me and my family, desperate to swap the smoke for country air. Over the years, she became a friend and confidant to my mother, and I found a new playmate, Susan, Mrs. Linnington's granddaughter. I looked up to Susan with her leopard print slacks and navy swimsuit with its neat white pleated skirt. How she could be seen with me in my regulation black and frankly battalion boat, I will never know. I thank you. We enjoyed wonderful picnics on the beach. And we're not talking a few sandy sandwiches and a hard-boiled egg. Oh, no. We're talking proper food. On china plates with Glinnington's homemade shepherd's pie, the dish wrapped in an old towel to keep it warm, and her legendary sherry trifle, the like of which I have never managed to emulate. I can picture the pair of us. Susan, an icon of cool, me frozen stiff, shivering in a saggy cosy, perched on high stools drinking strawberry milkshakes, or going blackberry picking and staining my white pinafore dress purple, much to the delight of my mother. No wonder I fell in love with Stranraer. I had come home. Lynn and Graham make the perfect team. Hard-working, organised, kind and caring. They, just like Graham's forefathers, have made this place their own. 20 years ago, Kangaroo Island was known almost exclusively to South Australians, a place to farm and fish. Now it's internationally renowned destination, a wildlife haven for native animals to thrive, free of foxes and rabbits. No wonder Lynn and Graham are so happy to call this place home.
This is Radio, FM 104.6, broadcasting from the Riverside Centre in Newport, giving people the opportunity to broadcast no matter their age or ability. We make entertaining radio whilst offering affordable advertising for local businesses. That is Radio.
Hello, and I'm speaking here with Lynn Wheaton, and Lynn runs one of the most wonderful places on Kangaroo Island, Stranraer Homestead, which is a B&B, but I think that's not doing it justice because it's run with love and care, and the food is like a five-star hotel and the hospitality is five-star. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you.
So how long have you been heading up here?
This is our 20th year.
Wow. And you get such fantastic accolades, don't you?
Well, it's lovely to see. We just love having people in the house. The house is so big when I first started, and I realised how empty it felt. And that's really why we started.
The home is actually, the property's been in the family for years, generations, hasn't it?
It has. We're the third, and our son has come back now, and he's the fourth.
Mm. So he'll take it over?
Yes, he already owns it. I work for him.
Oh, and will he keep it on as a B&B?
No, it'll become a house. It'll become a home again. And it was that. So we tried when we renovated to keep it as a home because we realised it would go back to one. And if you make huge alterations to something and it becomes not what it was, then it's difficult. And so we really didn't change it very much. Just one bedroom into two bathrooms.
Oh, it's stunning. And the food, where did you learn to cook like this?
Well, I started off, I did food nutrition in a university. And when I came out here, I took up home economics because they needed it. And I taught nutrition to year 12. What happened was that I just was two steps ahead of the students, I suppose, and learnt as I went. But the problem, the whole thing was that I loved food. So it was an easy learning for me, and I just did more and more and did more curriculum, and then eventually thought that the students at the school could do better if they had something that they could work for. So I then went and did a qualification that allowed me to get my students into the first step of university in hospitality or hotel management. So then I had to learn. I went around to all the hotels, learnt just by looking, nothing else.
And you've had quite a lot of success with your students, haven't you?
Yes, yes. It's really lovely to see because several of them are chefs, and I had several home economics teachers, and a lot of them often contact me and say, you know, what were those recipes we did? And I have to think because it's a while ago.
And with it being an island, do you see a lot of your old pupils?
Yes, and many of them now do tour companies. There's one this morning, Scott coming in, is one of my students and so on. So they just are around, and it's lovely to see them grow and develop, really. But many left the island, but many come back. I think it's a bit like our son, you know. He's been away now 30 years, but he's decided to come home. And there's many that do that here.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think draws them back?
Well, Derek says, he says he wants to farm, but he said it's so nice farming here. You don't have the thieving that goes on in lots of other places. You know, people have to have surveillance cameras everywhere. You know, quad bikes are stolen and stock is stolen. And, you know, and we haven't got that. They can't go anywhere. They have to go on the ferry. Yes. And so the police are there if anything occurs. you know, it's usually stop. So it's not much point.
Yes, and we were lucky enough to be here when it was sheep shearing.
Yes.
And that was quite a sight. And what's the average? What do they, how many do they shear, an hour or a minute?
Yeah, well, one shore, 300 a day. Yeah. And Graham couldn't believe it. He looked at the figures when we'd finished and he said he couldn't really believe he shore 300 a day. It's quite unbelievable. But they can shear, some of them can shear a sheep within 2 minutes.
Yeah,
like, and it's, you know, and they travel to places like Scotland, and actually they do a lot of travelling. They go quite north to the northern parts of usually Sweden and those areas as well. It's amazing where these shearers go.
I wish I'd known about that. It sounds like a really good job.
Yeah.
And we were watching, and as the lambs come out, having been shorn, they seem to literally have a spring in their step because they're so much lighter.
Yeah.
And they were bounding in the air like baby reindeer. It was so wonderful to see. How much does that fleece weigh?
That I can't really tell you. I've got no idea. I should have asked Graham that. But it's quite heavy on the rams and on the ewes. It's quite a weight, and it's a whole year's growth. So it would be weighing quite a bit.
Yeah, so be glad to get rid of it.
Yes. And that's why they feel so different.
Yes.
All of a sudden, that's different for them.
And they look so different. They look slightly embarrassed, don't they?
They do. They do. But they're well protected. There's always this layer of lanolin that sits there under the skin and comes up once it's been shorn. So they're very well protected against the elements. And they, within a couple of weeks, they've got a growth of wool back on. You know, it's just a fine growth, but it's enough to protect them.
And you were explaining, or Graham's explained to me, that if you want wool, you leave the wool to grow nice and thick, you leave the fleece on, and if you want them to be fattened up for meat, you shear them, is that right?
You do, that's correct. It's a hormonal change thing that allows that to happen, yes. So if we've got lambs that we want to sell for prime lamb and they haven't come up to market weight, then they shear them. Then they turn around to bring them up to market weight.
And for you, being a farmer's wife in effect, what's the best thing for you about that role?
Well, I didn't do much in the farming role, if I think about it, because for 35 years I was in the high school here. And Graham just ran it. I just did the books, and that's the only way I knew what we were really doing out there. Occasionally I'd see what we were happening and be part of it, but most of it I wasn't. And it was only until I came back to this place and we changed it that I became part of that. And sort of more my knowledge, I had it, but it grew because I was here. Yeah.
And I know the Kangaroo Island had a terrific drought 1 year, and Graham was telling me that the plants that are here now and are beautiful, the lavender and the roses, were one of the types that survived.
Yes, they do, yes.
Because you just couldn't afford to water them.
No, we had 5 years of drought here, and I remember the very first year of drought, and my lawns looked like just dirt. And I said to Graham, I couldn't live with them. So we bought water in to actually water the lawns, which was horrified him. But I needed, it's just a mind thing, isn't it? It's looking at this dry soil and no green around the house was just terrible. So I did water the lawns. I did put some water on the lawns so they became green. But it is a psychological thing, and I can understand people that are in drought for any length of time that it must be horrendous, really.
Mm.
We were in it for 4 years. Yeah.
So you get these extremes of weather, freak conditions.
We do. And if we look back, they were there years ago. Graham's grandfather kept good records, so we can see they were there too. You know, we talk about climate change. Certainly our ways of living have altered some of those things, but they've always been there. Those extremes have always been there.
And what's your biggest challenge of living on an island like this?
Firstly, it was adapting to the island. It took away, when I came to live here, first of all, it took away most of what I was doing. So therefore, you've got to look for what else you can do in life. Probably it's not a bad challenge for a lot of people. You know, we get very complacent in what we do and how we do it, and we just think we're comfortable in that, and we never challenge ourselves. Here, I had to. I couldn't do what I was doing in Adelaide, so I had to look around. So that was the biggest thing. And I remember when I first met Graham, I said, I don't know whether I can live here. And he said, well, he said, you have to make that decision because this is where I am. And secondly, every time I got really frustrated with anything, he said, go and do it. So I did lots of courses on weekends or connected with teaching, and I'd just disappear for a couple of days. And it was just a revival thing, really, of knowing that you could survive. And I did that for probably about 10 years, the first 10 years, and then I felt much more comfortable. Mm.
And what's your greatest pleasure from being here? Where's your go-to place, your happy place here?
Where's my happy place? Probably sitting under a tree in the garden here with a cup of coffee. It's just delightful.
And haven't you got a koala bear in one of the trees?
We have, yes. Well, he lives down by the cricket oval. And he travels up here and he just likes one of these trees. And he sits in there in the heat of the summer, but I think it's fairly high. We haven't got high trees around us, and this one is. And I think he sits there because it's cooler up there. And, yes, he often sits there. And we do have – they're very territorial, so we know that he'll be back in certain times.
What's your favourite Indigenous animal here?
I like the echidna.
Yes, everybody seems to. Why do you like that one? That's the one that's like a porcupine,
isn't
it?
It is. It's just such a delightful animal, you know. Just unawares of people, you know, will fossick around and dig, but just delightful.
And have you got any on the farm here?
Yes, yeah. And you see them in the wood heap. When we're out in the wood heap, sometimes they'll bury themselves. I say, oh, there's a kinder over there, madly trying to get out of our way.
They look like a very small shrub, don't they?
They
if
do.
You don't
and
know
you,
what you're looking
you,
for.
Yes, and they madly dig. And, so you know he's there, but he's trying to get away from you. But we see them, we know they're here because they dig holes when they're looking for all their ants and whatever they're looking for, and so you see these holes around the place. But occasionally the dogs will be barking at something in the garden, and I'll go out and it'll be in the kitchen and just look at them and bark at them.
And finally, what's your one, you know, your advice for anybody thinking, oh, that sounds like an idyllic life, I'll move to an island, I'll open up a B&B, have all this wildlife and beauty around me. Yeah, what's your advice for someone thinking that way?
There's work attached to the bottom of it.
Yes.
The bottom line is somebody needs to do the work. And many come to the island. When I started, there were 8 B&Bs. Now there are 2 of us only. We have a lot of self-contained. We have a lot more people that will have a house and won't be there for the people, but the people can stay in these houses. And that's what it's become more than our style of doing it. But it's entirely work. Yeah. That's the only reason I think that people don't do it.
Yeah. Oh, it's a lot of, because it's a tie.
And it is a tie to the place. It does cut your social life down. But you've got to remember, when I started this, I was finished with some of that. I was quite happy and contented not to do that anymore. Yeah. And I had done quite a bit of that. And I had done a lot of fundraising on the island, and I was, you know, at that time thinking, this is quite ideal.
Well, I'm so glad we've been able, lucky enough to experience this, and it's been a joy and a highlight of our holiday. So, Lynn Wheaton, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. marketing@vectisradio.fm.
Since Victorian times, the Isle of Wight has drawn holidaymakers to its shores. With its award-winning beaches, stunning countryside and local produce, the island, as we like to call it, has magic aplenty. Home to the rare red squirrel and brown hare, it only takes a fleeting glimpse of one of these creatures to make my heart sing. There really is something for everyone here. One place tourists flock to is the picture-perfect village of Shanklin. With its thatched cottages and stunning chine, it's easy to see why this is a must-see destination. Just a short car ride from the ferry Fastcut or Hover, Shanklin is the final stop on the island's iconic train line that uses old London Transport rolling stock, Bakerloo line carriages, no less. I met David and Ewer Woodward, owners of Keats Hotel and restaurant in Shanklin Old Village. Amongst a clutch of other accolades, they were recently runners-up on Channel 4's Four in a Bed, and the couple pride themselves on home-cooked food and attention to detail. I've just eaten here and can vouch for Ewa's culinary skills. Hear what David has to say about running a business here on the Isle of Wight.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, Isle of Wight's community station.
I'm here with David and Eva Woodward at Keats Cottage on the Isle of Wight. Now, it's a lovely place, Shanklin. What brought you to the island, David?
We'd heard about it from our next door neighbours in Bath, and they retired over here, and we thought it'd be a lovely place to come and visit. And we also had a little one on the way, so we thought, what better place to live than on the Isle of Wight?
Super. And you've got a restaurant here and a bed and breakfast, is that right?
That's right. We've got 5 double rooms, an apartment, and a little restaurant that holds 24 people.
And some of our listeners might know you both from Four in a Bed.
Yeah, for our sins, we took part in Four in a Bed. It was a lively experience. My wife threw up over the side of the boat, which was interesting.
We don't mention that.
But it's done wonders for our business, really, so we're glad we went on it. And we met some good friends on the way as well.
Yeah, because you filmed that a couple of years ago, yet do you still get repeat business from that?
Yes, we get loads. They repeat it every few months, and we get funny phone calls like, we are never sure when you answer the phone call if somebody would like to book a table in the restaurant, if they would like to book a room, and no, they would like just to discuss the show with us. So we get viewers calling from Scotland, for example, and I'm quickly thinking, me being Polish, if it's, you know, some long-lost David's family, I don't know, and they are just congratulating us. So yes, we had some hilarious moments, really, didn't we,
yeah,
after the show, yeah.
So running a B&B and a restaurant, I imagine that is hard work, to say the least. I mean, what's the thing you find the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge really is juggling the little one. I mean, my mum's a godsend. She looks after him 6 nights a week during the summer. But the hardest thing is trying to organise everything around our little one.
How old is he now?
He's 5. So just bringing him to school, I mean, we already start breakfast. And by the time the guests are coming down, one of us has to shoot over on the school run and come back to serve the breakfast. So if we've got a full house, it's
tricky.
It's quite, yes.
But I can't imagine Eva goes hungry with Eva's cooking.
Oh, no, no. Pancake City in this house,
yeah,
I tell you.
We try.
So what's your speciality, Eva? Is it Polish cooking, or is there some other dish you like to do?
We try to do mix. So it's me being Polish, so there is Polish twist. We do themed events, so you can try a Polish night. We do also Greek nights. This year, a new one, we've got Venetian night. It's David is half Swiss, so we do Swiss.
So we've done fondue nights in the past.
Oh, fondue night. That's going back a bit.
Yeah, I know.
Cheese fondue, the meat fondue. What about the chocolate fondue? Not yet.
Maybe that's the idea on the cards.
Eva would eat it all.
On Christmas Day we do traditional roast turkey, so it's twist, British European twist, really. When you come for breakfast, we source local sausages, local eggs, so we do full English. Also we do pancakes, we do smoked salmon.
You're the queen of the pancakes.
Yeah, smoked salmon, scrambled eggs, anything really. We've got quite a few vegans, vegetarians staying with us, so nothing's too much problem if we've got enough of.
Well, we try and do a small menu with quality ingredients.
All local,
Eva's
as much as we can.
Eva's taught herself to cook as well.
Really?
Yeah, and
when you asked before what was the biggest challenge for me, I think it was me volunteering and saying, yes, I can do the cooking.
And did you ever regret those words?
Yes. The first few months, I haven't slept, hardly slept at all, because it was so much pressure. I knew what's cooking all about. I did cooking, but it was on a much smaller scale. So I always repeat that, yes, cooking in the professional kitchen and being your own boss. I said, after that, if David sends me up to the sky in the big, yes, the big machine, it won't be as scary as I think doing cooking here.
And do you have a lot of people coming back? I mean, people must sort of fall in love with the place in love with your food.
We have
a lot of repeat trades. We've got a sort of a core of regulars in Shanklin.
And they are lovely.
They come
once, and then we start chatting, and then we all become friends. We go on holiday together.
What amazes us is that we have a lot of people who live on the island who will actually come and stay with us. They'll come and have dinner, and then they'll stay overnight as well.
Because we're just around the corner
from the theatre. We do a lot of work with the theatre.
Of course, yeah.
And that's a massive
Shanklin Theatre, yeah. Because we get a lot of big stars over here, don't we?
Well, we We just had Jimmy Carr, and he came to eat 2 weeks ago, so that's our claim to fame on the island, I guess.
And we do pre-theatre menu. We are open Thursday, Friday, Saturday night now, and yes, we start early.
And is that throughout the year?
Throughout the year. This year, because of the little one, we decided we reduce the evening hours. B&B's open 7 days a week, but yes, the only way we can really see Jack is in the evenings after he finishes school. So we decided just Thursday, Friday, Saturday this year.
It was 5 nights last year. Yeah, we'll see. If anyone wants to arrange a bigger party, then we're open for anything, really, any day.
Because you do big parties here, don't you?
Oh, well, not huge, but we're starting to get quite a following, and we're starting to do regularly 20 to 30 people parties. So
when it's Christmas Day lunch, we did 70. When you think it's 20 cover restaurant, what did we have to do? We did two sittings, and we opened next door snag room. So that was...
Yes. How did you manage it? Because there's you two and one other, is that right?
Yeah, and then we have one other person to help us for Christmas Day.
How? And how do you remain sane and so nice? I mean, I just keep biting everybody's heads off.
We don't bite there.
I mean, the thing is, we had so many regulars coming on Christmas Day lunch, so it more felt like one big family.
How lovely.
So, it wasn't too bad.
On the outside, we don't look stressed at all. But it's like a duck paddling with the legs going frantic underneath. But
you don't... How many do you sleep here?
You can do around 14. 14 is the normal amount. You probably get an extra couple.
And we're dog friendly.
A
lot of people now have allergies, don't they? There's gluten free, wheat free, celiacs. Do you cater for all those type of people?
We cater for absolutely everything. Yeah. You have to in this day.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
It's getting more and more so, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
Now this show, as you know, is called Wisdom and Pratfalls, and I always have to ask my guests, what's your pratfall moment, that hideous moment when you want the ground to open up under you?
The only pratfall moment I really had was doing the refurbishment. It was such an undertaking. It was constant stress, really, for 9 months. Me and my mother worked from 6 a.m. till midnight every day trying to get the place ready. Since we've opened, it's not all smooth sailing, but we haven't had any disastrous moments. I've had lots of other places. I've had fires on New Year's Eve. I've had floodings, all sorts. But here, touch wood, it's all gone quite smoothly.
I had fire alarm getting on the night of Isle of Wight Festival last year. So you can imagine, 3 a.m. when everyone just got back to bed, and then you've got the false fire alarm going off. So I was like, oh dear me, out of all days in the year.
So quickly, what's your favourite spot on the island?
Steep Hill Cove is my favourite.
Yeah, is that absolutely for eating or swimming?
Swimming,
that's dangerous,
chilling out, it's definitely my favourite. We also, as a family, we love Osborne House. You're keen on Robin Hill.
And I just love Shanklin Seaside. That's the beauty, just working here, you have 5 minute walk down to the seaside, lovely Salix Cafe, just for hot chockey. When we ask Jack, what would you like to do today? His answer is always, seaside, please. So it must be Shanklin Seaside for me. Yeah.
Typical boy. Well, it's been lovely speaking to you both. Thank you
very much, Devon.
Thank you. Your local station, Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Kangaroo Island is, not surprisingly, home to more than just kangaroos. This is the place to find wallabies, koalas and little spiky fellas called echidnas, so loved by the locals they're etched on the 5-cent coin. I think they look a bit like a porcupine, but I'm quickly corrected. These little critters are unique. One guide told me she'd been out with a group of tourists hoping to spy one. Unfortunately, it was a very hot day and they were out of luck. But when she arrived home, the splinkers were on her lawn, and there, showering under the spray, was the elusive echidna. I like to think he had a tinny at his elbow too. Kangaroo Island reminds me of the Isle of Wight with its beautiful beaches, acres of farmland and abundance of wildlife. I like to watch the sheep being sheared in the barn at Stranraer. They file in all warm and woolly and leave, seconds later, naked. They leap up, kick their legs, overjoyed at their rapid weight loss. When they bar with delight, they don't have an Australian accent, but sound just like their country cousins on the Isle of Wight. The Isle of Wight's agricultural heritage is most evident on the West Wight, also known as the Back of the White, where Jackie and her husband Todd farm. Here's what Jackie has to say about life on the land.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Jackie and Todd, you run Chapel Furlong Farm here in Holston on the Isle of Wight. What's the best bit about it for you, Jackie?
Where we live, the views.
You've got fabulous sea views here, haven't you?
Yes.
And you, Todd?
Things that, because the seasons change, everything changes from day to day. No 2 days are the same.
Yeah. And you were telling me earlier that you first ploughed a field when you were 9 years old, sitting on your dad's knee. That sounds fantastic.
Well, I did, but it's a very long time ago now.
40 years ago, yeah?
Yes, plus a few.
And you're quite a team, because you've been doing it almost as long, Jackie, haven't you?
Well, I got into it when I married Todd, which was 38 years ago.
Any regrets?
No.
No. Because you've got sheep, cows and arable here, haven't you?
Yes.
And what's the worst bit? What's the bit you dread?
Getting up early.
And what's your earliest start?
Depends on the season. I usually get up about 6 o'clock, 5:45. But when we're lambing, obviously, if you're on earlies, it can be about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning.
Do you get attached to those little lambs?
No, there's too many of them, and they grow into stroppy teenagers.
Easy to say goodbye then. And if you could do any other job, have you got any other passion apart from this?
No, I don't think so.
No?
No.
Todd?
No, I think I'm probably unemployable now. If you want to give me a job, I'm too cantankerous.
And what keeps you awake at night? Because this is a 24/7 job, isn't it? There's no getting away from it. What keeps you awake?
Me? Well, nothing much keeps me awake, but just paying the bills, making money all the time to keep everything ticking over. Farming is so expensive these days.
Do you ever get an opportunity to get away from it?
Yeah, we do go away in the winter. Yeah, make sure we do get a week or so away and go somewhere hot and sunny.
It wasn't always like that, though. You couldn't always get away, could you?
No. We spent the first 30 years without a holiday and didn't go anywhere, didn't we?
We had a honeymoon.
Where was that?
Wales.
I think it rained most of the time.
It did.
I can't imagine that. I can't imagine being in a job where you've got to get up that early, where it's relentless, because it is 7 days a week, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. It never switches off.
And no matter what the weather?
No, still the same.
And where we've just had this snow and ice, what was that like? That must have been hell.
It's surprising how well animals cope with the snow. It doesn't seem to bother them that much.
And you?
They've got food and water. I just get cold.
And you've got your son now, haven't you, John?
Yes.
He helps as well,
yes.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
So is this something he'll inherit?
I expect so. Yeah. I expect so, yes, if he wants to.
So how old was he when he ploughed his first field? Was he taken after Dad?
I think he was about 15 or 16, so not quite so early. But.
And with them being the sort of younger generation, do they regard it differently to you? Does he see things in a different way?
Yes, I think they do. They want more of what everybody else wants. Our generation made do and mended and coped with what you had to, but I think this generation expects more from life.
Yeah, I think that's very true in whatever profession they're in, isn't it? And whatever walk of life, it's just a difference, isn't it? Well, it's been lovely talking to you, and it's a beautiful day to see the farm, but I know you're busy, so I won't keep you. And thank you both, Jack and Todd Carter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, Isle of Wight's community station.
Walking away from the heart of the village towards Shanklin Beach, I hear the sound of seagulls. Birds on both islands keep their calls more distinct. Here on the Isle of Wight, we have gulls and cormorants, egrets and shanks, wrens and robins, all sorts of feathered friends for twitchers to listen out for and see at hides. My favourite is at Newtown Creek, a timber shack decked out with binoculars and telescopes to view the birds at close quarters and glimpse the occasional seal lolling on the banks. I remember on Kangaroo Island, 30 pelicans standing in neat rows on the boardwalk. the sign saying feeding time, 5 p.m. But like canny Black Friday bargain hunters, these early birds are queuing by two. When one latecomer touches down and tries to push in, he is ordered to the back of the line and the pecking order quickly reinstated. Driving on Kangaroo Island, I could have been on any country lane on the Isle of Wight. Except the trees aren't oak or ash, but gum trees, where koala bears hang out. Literally, their bulky bodies lounge like grey furry rugby balls in whip-thin branches. Introduced in the 20s, koalas have made Oz their home. So much so, they have become quite the pest, shredding the eucalyptus trees of their leaves and killing them off. Talk about biting the hand that feeds them. When they're not eating, they're sleeping. A whopping 23 hours a day. That's officially more than the average Isle of Wight teenager. Apparently, these creatures are not high on eucalyptus, as popular myth would have us believe. They just love a lie-in. Less potheads, more sleepyheads. When one lollops across the road in front of the car, I'm so shocked by its awkward gait, I only just managed to stop. It looks like an overgrown toddler in a furry baby grazer ambles into the undergrowth before re-emerging halfway up the trunk of a tree, pausing briefly to look directly at me as if to say, "Move along, there's nothing to see here." Inside, I'm squealing with delight at connecting with one of the cutest creatures on the planet. He's less impressed and simply blinks before heading up to his penthouse suite where he makes himself comfortable and drops off to sleep again. It's a hard life if you're a koala bear, and a confusing one, because he's not actually a bear at all. He's a marsupial. I want to see a mum with her baby in her pouch. Kangaroo or koala, I'm not fussy. But first, I need to get some food and shut-eye. I won't be languishing in bed for 23 hours, but I will be a sight more comfortable than the koala looked. Time to move off one island and on to another. This time, onto the Great Barrier Reef. There are no herons on Heron Island, but it is home to thousands of birds. If I'd known that I was about to board the Vomit Comet to get here, I would have passed on the homemade strawberry ice cream on sale at the port. Obviously, I tucked into my tub as I talked to an incredible man. An Iraqi war veteran, injured in the line of duty, retired on a pension. He wants to work and put his wealth of knowledge to good use, but is tied by red tape. Overqualified for some jobs, medically unfit for others. An ex-sailor, he knows a thing or two about the ocean and creatures that live here. He imparts his knowledge with genuine enthusiasm to me. I glance at his girlfriend, glowing with pride. Or perhaps she is glowing for another reason, as he proudly announces she might be pregnant. He does most of the talking, then explains why. She had rubella, her mother having refused to pay for the inoculation. And she's partly deaf with learning difficulties. She tells me he can scuba, but won't even snorkel as he doesn't want to leave her on the beach alone. They turn to look at each other, smile, and talk parenting strategies. I can see this baby will want for nothing. Once on the island, I get chatting to another couple. She is a Vietnamese orphan, adopted into an Australian family. She met a husband in a bar. Turns out one of his school textbooks told of his wife's story, and he had a photo of her as a child playing the piano. They still own that piano. She has told her story to the world and is currently working on trying to help Vietnamese orphans find their birth mothers. I hope she finds what she's looking for on Heron Island.